Coming up this week in computer hardware, AMD XConnect means external GPUs for all the laptops. Corsairs get a nice case, new NVIDIA drivers, and a low-power GTX 950, and PresentMod gives the goods. All that more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 354, recorded March 10th, 2016. It's a bird, it's a plane, it's PresentMon.
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Drobo, a family of safe and expandable yet simple-to-use storage arrays. Drobos are designed to protect your important data forever. Visit drobo.com/twit and use the code TWIT100 to save $100 off select Drobos, including the new B810i.
Welcome to Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch weekly show that aims to bring you the most useful, most delightful, most professional, and occasionally most rain-sodden hardware coverage in technology. We love the mobile, but mostly we love the desktops, preferably the high-performance ones, but we get cheap too, because quite frankly, that's the way I roll. Joining me as always, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Ryan Schrouts. Is Hello. It raining where you are,
It is. Schrouts? It is, yeah. It's been raining since about yesterday at this time, actually.
Oh, my goodness.
But here's raining for you, too, out there. That's necessary for you guys. You need that. We don't necessarily need it. But it does make me sleepy. It does make me like it's harder to get out of bed in the morning when it's raining. And I'm imagining I will fall asleep fairly early this evening. It turns out when you have a kid, that happens a lot, though. That it's like, oh,
bring that up. But I figured
it's 9:30. Weird. Snore.
Because you've been up since the unmeasurable crack.
It's just a lot of work. It's a lot of extra effort involved and stuff. So.
This whole child thing is just complicated. Oh, my goodness. Some interesting news this week. We have a new, what promises to be speed champion in the world of SSDs that we probably will not be able to afford anytime in the near future. Yeah. But you are continuing your battle with DirectX 12 performance testing. PresentMon frame time performance data for DX12/UWP games.
Yeah, so this is interesting. A lot of what we've talked about in the last few weeks surrounding DirectX 12 benchmarking, and then last week or the week before when it came to that unified Windows platform and kind of a lot of the changes they were implementing with games and that kind of are locked out of overlays, they're locked out of being able to change INI files and modding and stuff like that. One of the concerns for us was performance evaluation, right? How are we going to do it? Where are we going to be able to find tools that could do it? And it is a much more complex thing. Now, there has always existed this kind of, I don't want to say holy grail, but this massive knowledge, this massive information called the Windows Event Timer. And it has basically information you can, any information you could ever possibly want about what's happening in Windows, from graphics side to storage side to audio, video, whatever. But it is also like the most unwieldy, complicated software, accessing it, setting it up, trying to tell what to look for and what to not look for and how to filter it all out was always a huge pain. And that's why we always had tools like Fraps. And then we had tools like FCAT and frame rating that kind of did stuff completely external from the system as well. And in other words, just try to get different data points than that. There's a group of graphics guys, graphics engineers over at Intel, and one of them that I talk with fairly often, off and on, anytime new technologies comes out. He's a very smart guy, knows about DX12, knows about the graphics pipeline, knows all that kind of stuff. And his team had some software that they had been writing internally for development profiling, right? So when a game developer profiles software, their own software, they're trying to figure out how it performs, how it runs, where the bottlenecks are, those types of things. And so when I was talking with him about the whole UWP DX12 fiasco, it came up that it's like, you know, we kind of have some things that might be interesting for you. Let me see if I can get permission to release these in kind of an open source format. And he did. And they posted it yesterday. And it was called PresentMon. And it's basically a present monitor. The goal of this is to look for present commands as they are given to the operating system. And a present command is essentially the indication from the game or the driver or the OS. Actually, in this case, it's the OS to say, hey, let's go ahead and send out the next frame, or we're ready for the next frame to begin processing. And so what you can do is, if you judge the time between those present commands, you essentially have your frame times, right? Mm-hmm. To some degree. So what this tool does is it actually kind of takes all the Windows event timer stuff, the ETW kind of suite, as it's called, and it filters it down to really kind of like an easy to use dummy proof application that runs the command prompt that only looks for present commands. And you can filter based on application, you can look at all of them. But the important part here is that this works regardless of the API, because it's actually looking at the OS level, not the API level. So it works on DX11, works on DX12, works on Vulkan, works on OpenGL. It works on unified Windows platform games, right? Which could be DX12 or 11 or whatever. So even though those games are locked down, the operating system event timings are still available. And so we still have access to that. So if you look at some of these graphs, like the first one up at the top, the first two that are just like show green lines, like that one right there, it's Gears of War Ultimate, which is a UWP game. It has an integrated benchmark, but it's not very good. It doesn't give you detail. It doesn't log anything. This is showing you frame times from a GTX 980 Ti running, looks like, you know, 60 seconds or so of the game, right? And that's data we would have had, we have not had access to before today or yesterday, however you want to look at it, right? If you go down to the next graph, what's important to note is that the PresentMon data is very, very close, very similar in the pipeline to where Fraps would normally get its data. So this graph right here shows a DX11 game, right? It's not a DX12 game. We've been able to get data from this for a while. But we wanted to profile this profiling app to see what data it was most correlated to. So the blue line in that graph that's very thin, very narrow, is our frame rating FCAT capture-based performance analysis. And it shows a very narrow band of frame times, which means it's very smooth, very consistent. The green line there shows PresentMon, which is a, you know, it's slightly wider. It's actually quite a bit wider, more variant. And so that's kind of an interesting look. And the next graph actually shows you how the PresentMon data compares to the Fraps data. As you see, they're very, very similar in kind of their range and scope of variability, right? So it's not exact. So right, it is slightly different in the pipeline than where Fraps is, but it's much closer to each other than they are to, you know, the output onto the screen. So if you look at the third graph down right there, you'll see all three of those kind of combined. You get an idea that essentially what we're getting is Fraps-style data from this new application rather than frame rating or, you know, capture-based data. And it's important to point that out because I have spent so much time trying to tell people about the benefits of capture-based performance analysis. And so this is not an analog to it. We haven't perfected it, but we're getting more data than we were able to get to before. And then finally, if you scroll down, I think there's one more graph on there, and that actually shows like, hey, okay, we can actually get interesting information from this. That is the 980 Ti versus the Fury X in Gears of War Ultimate Edition looking at frame times. And again, that's data we were not able to access or to utilize before yesterday. And so even though it's still not perfect, this is a good first step towards being able to analyze and profile games and benchmarks and actually other applications as well, anything that uses the present command. So what we've been able to solidify here is, hey, it's not the end of the world now. We can actually, games that are released as UWP apps will be able to profile to some degree. Also, it's also kind of interesting to note that the UWP games are vSync limited in that they will only ever go up to your maximum refresh rate of your monitor. So we were running at 120 hertz refresh rate on this system in order to give the highest range, the most range for the game to actually render at, right? So when I ran this the first time on a 60 hertz monitor, you kind of had like a mostly straight line or a variable line that was very much centered on 16 milliseconds or 60 hertz refresh. So when we increase that up to a higher refresh rate monitor, we're able to get more granular data out of it to really kind of compare and contrast the AMD and NVIDIA solutions here. So there's still some stuff to work out even on the UWP side, but thanks to this app that actually the developers, kind of the graphics engineers at Intel said, look, here's a free tool we use internally anyway. Feel free to have a look at it. And this definitely has helped us out so far.
Excellent.
Yeah.
The interesting news from AMD. XConnect technology for external graphics. Big amounts of excitement at CES over Razer's Blade Stealth, the external graphics box, what we call the Razer Core. And it turns out some of the technology behind that is essentially AMD's XConnect, which has now been opened up to any manufacturer that wants to support it. Pretty crazy, right? So the technology that AMD showed up for the announcement is powered by Razer. And Razer's Core handles 375-watt GPUs, the R9 Fury, the Nano, the R9 300 series GPUs, up to the R9 390X. Sebastian notes in the write-up that the R9 Fury X isn't listed as being compatible because there's no support for liquid cooling, but I'm sure somebody's going to find a Dremel tool or a can opener and figure out a way to make that work because gaming. What's interesting about this is XConnect is not tied to any vendor. It's generic driver support for GPUs over Thunderbolt 3.0. All you need is, you know, Radeon software 16.2.2 or later, Thunderbolt 3 port, a 40 gigabit per second Thunderbolt 3 cable, Windows 10 build 10586 or later, a certified Thunderbolt 3 graphics enclosure configured with supported Radeon R9 series GPUs, Thunderbolt firmware, NVMe v16. All of this is pretty manageable. The one thing that's going to be tricky is BIOS support for external graphics over Thunderbolt 3, which your laptop system vendor is going to have to make happen for you. And you could argue that someone might do an open source operating system update for that, but I doubt it, because that would be a non-trivial modification of the firmware. This is pretty cool. Sebastian notes that this could be the beginnings of an open standard for external GPU support on laptops. Cue excitement and enthusiasm from all gamers that want to own a gaming laptop but don't want to own a 15-pound beast. And you could argue that the Razer Blade Stealth already is that. Point taken. Interesting. It's kind of we've been seeing the toasters, the GPU toasters, showing up for a while, and this is probably the closest it's come to being practical for all the vendors, at least the ones with the Thunderbolt 3 port to support. Excited? You ready for this? Or
I am. Yeah. I have been for a very long time, honestly. To me, I'm still trying to figure out exactly how much of this is AMD tech versus how much of it is like operating system based technology. Because right. It was really, I'm sure the operating system has to build in support for removal of graphics devices, especially while things may be utilizing them. And then the drivers have to include support for that as well. But I'm not sure if like Microsoft mandated, here's how we're going to support external graphics configurations, or if it was maybe AMD kind of doing more of that kind of development side as well.
Sure.
This is still what everybody wants. Like, I want to have my Dell XPS 13 to take with me when I go on a trip, but I also want to be able to game at home, and I don't want to necessarily have to have another desktop PC there. If I could just have a little docking station that has my graphics card in it, and also, you know, a couple USB ports and stuff to connect external keyboards and mouse to it, that's a plus as well. I mean, that's really what we want. And I'm excited to try to. I'll be at GDC next week. I'm sure AMD will be showing this kind of configuration off. I'm curious to find out about the pricing and the availability kind of what other options there are. Because there have been other external Thunderbolt-based graphics, enclosures, I guess. But I don't know if maybe they don't all meet some of these standards, you know, Thunderbolt firmware at a certain point, a certified Thunderbolt 3 graphics enclosure. So I know Asus at CES showed one off as well. It was kind of a more universal looking one, where obviously this Razer one may only work with their own laptops. But I would assume that wouldn't be the case, right? That the whole point of Thunderbolt 3 is it's kind of interoperable, right. And as long as it's certified, it should just work. So I'm also curious to see what NVIDIA's response is to this, if they have any kind of claims to make about their external GPU preparedness.
There's some mean part of me that says it'll be incredibly similar but non-compatible and require vendors to make a choice.
Yeah, I mean, you could see that direction going down there.
I mean, it wouldn't be the first time.
No. But again, if the idea of a certified enclosure is a thing, then you would think you would just have to have graphics drivers that install it. Now, you know, if you're NVIDIA or AMD for that point, you want Dell and HP and those guys to sell external enclosures for GPUs, and you just want to make sure your GPU is the one that people want to put in there. So I think, especially at this point, after this kind of X-Connect release where they talk about it being open and that it's not vendor specific, it would be a pretty big disservice for NVIDIA to come out and kind of counter that with something that was very locked down, I guess.
It would be nice of them to play on behalf of the entire community.
It would. Yes.
I don't know. Yes. We can hope. Corsair Carbide 400C mid-tower enclosure review. Ladies and gentlemen, mid-tower enclosure, very large window, black.
Very.
Yeah, it's actually, I mean, as far as cases with windows goes, it is a very understated window. I love the fact that it's practically the full entire side of the case. It is subtle. Sebastian, who wrote the review up at PC Pro, refers to it as understated. Does not offer the noise dampening of the Q, but that is okay. Two 3.5-inch drive bays, three 2.5-inch drive bays, seven expansion slots, mini ITX, micro ATX, ATX, EATX, should you be one of the, you know, eight people who bought an EATX motherboard in the last few months. Two USB 3.0 ports, microphone, headphone, fan mounts, 320 or two 140 at top, or at the front, two 120 or 140 at the top, one 120 millimeter fan in the rear. It includes a single 120 at the rear and a 140 millimeter fan at the front. 360 millimeter radiator of fill at the front, 240 millimeter radiator at the top, 120 millimeter or a small radiator at the rear. You know, standard ATX power supply, 370, basically a 8.5-inch, 370 millimeters GPU maximum. The $99, nice looking case. Nice looking case, and looks like it was fairly easy to build inside of, if I'm not mistaken. So,
yeah, I'm a big fan of the way this case looks. We actually got in its bigger brother, the 600C, that was out a little while ago, for one of our VR builds. Yeah,
14.5-inch GPUs, not 8-inch. 370 millimeter is a 14.
Oh, right. Yes, yeah.
My apologies.
Yeah, 10.5 is like reference speed. Yeah. So yeah, the big brother is very similar, except it actually rotates the system. Is it 180 degrees? I think it might be 100. It's 180 degrees. It rotates it inside the system. Wait, no, 90. I can't see the case from here, so I'm not sure. But the 400C is a typical kind of mounting system for it in there, and it really is very, very similar looking. It's just a little bit smaller. I do like that window. I think last night on our podcast I called it the Infinity window, because it reminds me of like the branding that they would use on the Dell XPS 13 Infinity Edge display. Very nice. The build quality on it is pretty good, according to Sebastian. The doors kind of come off real easily as well, which is a nice touch for when you've got it on the side and you're working on it. You don't have to worry about the doors getting in the way. You know, and for $100, I think it's a $99 case. The build quality and build of materials is actually pretty good. Corsair has, you know, they've pretty much run the gamut of case designs at this point, right? Like, I feel like if you go from the 900D down to like the Bulldog home theater PC system that they, you know, they've been showing for a while, but will actually be launching this year. They will basically have one of everything. There's no way you could possibly have a case requirement that they wouldn't have a solution for. But there's a lot of neat stuff about this case that help it stand out for $99 for people looking for new builds.
New builds.
Yeah.
New builds are good. Oh my goodness! The other thing that came out from AMD this week is the Radeon Crimson Edition 16.3. Have you had a chance to test these yet?
Yes, kind of. They're actually, if you look at that article that looks at the PresentMon performance tool, we're using the 16.3 driver in it, right? And it adds improvements for Gears of War specifically and DirectX 12 in general into it. But this driver actually, you know, this is the one that introduced the X-Connect. It introduces drastic improvements in performance in both Gears of War Ultimate Edition and the new Hitman game that's coming out tomorrow, which is supposed to still launch with the DirectX 12 variant. As far as I can tell, they have another feature in here that they're calling it's like a power efficiency check mark. It quote allows the user to disable some power efficiency optimizations, which I haven't tested this yet, but what I'm thinking is that this is for cards like the Nano or cards like the Fury X that maybe, or maybe just the regular Fury, that kind of like they're trying to keep at a specific thermal dissipation level in order to do that. So they adjust their clock speeds dynamically, which is good. You know, NVIDIA is doing that, AMD is doing that. But on cards like the Nano that had very aggressive power limits, they would vary the clock speed pretty dramatically. And because of that very rapid clock speed change, you would see frame time changes, so you'd see some stutter and some judder inserted because of the less than consistent GPU clock speed. So what I'm guessing this setting is it will disable that, allow it to run a slightly higher than what it was rated at, you know, when it launched or out of the box, but with the goal of having a more consistent clock speed so that you don't have to worry about introducing judder or frame time variance because of that. Specific feature. So hopefully it's something I'll get a chance to mess around with, or somebody else will get a chance to mess around with soon, and we'll be able to report back results on it. That's pretty interesting. So they did a lot in this driver, and from what I'm being told, like, just DirectX 12 in general has kind of been re-architected quite a bit in 16.3. And so as now that we're going to start to see, you know, Ashes of the Singularity officially launches on March 31st. The new Hitman game starts coming out tomorrow. And we'll see DirectX 12 titles kind of at a regular cadence throughout the rest of 2016. So, and it's also important for them just to get in the habit of releasing drivers, right? NVIDIA is very good at that. They're very frequent with their driver releases. And AMD is not so much. So I think just kind of getting in the habit of doing something over and over again is really going to help them. Oh, this also adds direct flip. So the issue we talked about with the Ashes of the Singularity benchmark, where we couldn't get it to do like true VSync off with screen tearing, will now be addressed. You'll be able to do that in the AMD platforms as well. So that's all part of 16.3. Good on them.
Yes, I agree. You should be backing up your data. If you're not backing up your data, 3, 2, 1, it's a simple idea. 3 copies, right? You got the one in your computer. You got separate one on another machine. You got one at a different location. 3 copies on at least 2 different mediums or 2 different formats, at least one offsite. Great way to do one of those backups locally is Adrobo, ladies and gentlemen. It's really simple. Adrobo is the safe, simple, expandable solution for your storage needs. They have a family, a veritable cornucopia of external storage arrays. You can pretty much run Adrobo. It's just about that easy. And Adrobo is added to the high end of its product line with the Adrobo B810i. It's an 8-bay iSCSI SAM with data-aware tiering that offers storage capabilities usually found and more expensive enterprise solutions. Now, you very rarely hear me say the phrase enterprise solutions, but the idea is that they are bringing big, ready-to-go, bolted-together, high-speed stuff that's really easy to administer. Data where tiering means it's automatically capable of tiering frequently used transactional data from stored data that's seldom used. It means businesses can consolidate storage resources and share that storage across all their connected clients and their applications. You can access physical and virtual storage in a single array with on-demand ability to scale for both capacity and performance as needed, i.e. it'll adapt to what you need at a given moment. Smart volumes allow you to create up to 255 individual drives with a maximum capacity of 64 terabytes each. A lot of storage, people. Provisioning as necessary. No more guessing how to make each volume, because you know you don't have to worry about how big it's going to be, because it's going to be up to 64 terabytes. That is a ton of space. Dual iSCSI ports for up to 2x gigabit Ethernet performance when you use MPIO in a Microsoft environment. Collaboration, testing, development, backup, running Microsoft Exchange. So much more can be done inside of your Drobo. It is perfect for small and medium-sized businesses that don't have dedicated IT support, because it's really simple to run. I've been using Drobos on and off since Drobo began a long time ago, and it's really simple. Did I mention the whole idea? You can see it there in your monitor right now. See the lights, kids? They're green. That means everything is okay. If a drive, if a drive light turns yellow, that means it is time to stop, drop, and basically look at the administration tool and get ready to pop in a new drive. You're running out of space. A drive dies. It goes red. It's super, 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 super easy to use. I do not know how to make it sound even simpler. Like, you know, if it goes yellow, put a bigger drive in. If it goes red, you need, you know, to replace that drive immediately. I mean, I don't know how to make it any less complicated than that. I've been running a Drobo 5D here for my storage on my machine. It is nice. It is speedy. And it offers me a fairly huge amount of storage. And I have storage image. Storage issues, I think, is probably a safe way of putting it.
Yep.
I like me a lot of storage. You know, the 5D is pretty cool. You know, USB 3.0 and 5 drives. And I'm happy. I'm happy with the performance because it's moving really, really fast. It also offers a pair of Thunderbolt ports if you want to daisy chain Thunderbolt devices with Mac OS 10. So it's good stuff. Cool. If you haven't checked it out, do us a favor. Visit drobo.com/twit to learn more about the Drobo B810i and to check out their complete line of products. And when you order a B810i between now and April 30th, you get two free 2 terabyte hard drives for free. Did I mention free? Two free 2 terabyte hard drives. Plus, when you use the code TWIT100, you'll save $100 off the purchase of a B810i or other select Drobo models. That's drobo.com/twit. Use the code TWIT100. And we want to thank Drobo for their continuing support of This Week in Computer Hardware.
Indeed.
Vulcan is here. NVIDIA releases the 36447 Wickel drivers with Vulcan. Vulcan. Sorry,
it sounds cool, doesn't it?
I've been watching like the new Marvel's trailers, the Marvel trailers, the battle trailers, and you know, I'm feeling very breathy and excited about anything that sounds even remotely sci-fi right now.
Right, I agree. So it sounds cool. Yeah. So this driver added Vulcan support. It is worth noting that 36447 has already been superseded. 36447 had apparently a pretty nasty bug in it where if you had multiple...
36451 now.
Right. That's the one you should download and install. And I'm pretty sure they took 36447 down because what would happen was users that had multiple monitors, if you had multiple monitors connected to your system, when you did the install, when you rebooted, all you got was a black screen. And disconnecting the monitors didn't solve that. You had to actually reboot into safe mode and reinstall the driver or uninstall that driver to get it back up and running. Leading some people to believe that NVIDIA had killed their hardware, when in reality they just it was a software issue. You had to go into safe mode and undo it, which is still crappy.
Disabled it.
Yeah, and like the workaround was, like I said, go into safe mode and uninstall it, go back to an older version, or disconnect your other monitor so that you only have one monitor attached, install the new driver and then reattach your other monitors, which is also a crummy user experience. But that has apparently been fixed with the 364-51. They fixed that bug. So you can just apparently go ahead and install all you want. Nice. With all of your monitors attached. But it did add Vulkan support. It also is the, quote, game-ready driver for Tom Clancy's The Division, Need for Speed, Hitman, and Ashes of the Singularity. So, nice. You know, that just means that there's some performance improvements for all of those games in there. And that's it. I think that's all that stood out in that particular driver.
You missed the episode where we talked about Vulkan. That's the Kronos group, which probably is even less clear as to what it is. It's a new set of APIs, AMD Imagination, Intel, NVIDIA, Qualcomm, and lots of other individuals, corporations working together to attempt to make OpenGL ready to fight DirectX 12, or at least to make everything from cell phones to desktop GPUs or cell phone GPUs to desktop GPUs more super awesome to code to and out of the iron fist of Microsoft. Am I overstating that iron fist of Microsoft thing? It just seems like it's pretty much what they're trying to do.
No.
Something pretty exciting for me and my super micro mini ATX, unbelievably tiny S4 mini case, which is currently running a 750 Ti, is Asus's new GeForce GTX 950. 2 gigabytes of RAM, requires no PCIe power. Which is fascinating. The NVIDIA announced a GTX 950 TDP of 90 watts, which means it needed a PCIe power connector, makes it, you know, it's a big jump over the 750 Ti or 750, you should say. Well, 750 Ti or 750 in terms of performance. And as Ryan notes, or Sebastian notes in the write-up, it seems to be the replacement for the 750. But they've gotten the power consumption down to like 75 watts max. So you can run it much like the 750 Ti without an external GPU power. So,
which is cool.
Yeah. Was available temporarily, not currently available.
Oh, really?
That's what the note at the bottom says. Well, let me go. Okay. We can do we're on the internet. We are live.
Most of the time.
I have the power of Amazon. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
the rain has not stopped us yet, but
the rain has not killed the internet connection.
Say that you should see the amount of rain that's actually falling down right now over here. I would not say that lightly. 750 Ti, it is definitely not currently available on NVIDIA. So keep an eye out, though. That's the Asus GeForce GTX 950 2G. Do not confuse it with an older model that is incredibly similar, but will require the full 90 watts and a PCIe adapter. No pricing information on that as of yet.
Yeah.
But it's a very nice looking card. It's got a certain sort of R2-D2 kind of color pattern going on there that I'm down with.
Agreed.
Yeah, I like that it's got HDMI 2.0 DisplayPort and DVI, so they didn't cheap out on the ports. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Alan and I were chatting about this yesterday. I'm sure you got to chat a lot more with him. Seagate's going to show off at OCP Summit what I'm now thinking of as the ridiculous SSD. 10 gigabytes per second PCI Express X16 flash drive. Claims to reach half-height device over PCIe 3.0 X8 link hitting 6.7 gigabytes per second. That's the first one. And the second one is the crazy one. It's the 3.0 by 16 unit. If you scroll down a little bit, basically a GPU worth of lanes that claims 10 gigabytes per second. And if you close in on that picture, you will see a massive heatsink over a lot of memory. Like an M.2 form factor SSD inside of there. Four M.2 form factor SSDs inside of there, which would be like four separate NVMe devices. Alan points in his article that 10 gigabytes per second number probably seems familiar if you remember him last summer bolting together five Intel SSD 750s, dropping 2 million IOPS and 10 gigabytes per second in a pretty pricey build. So
And I think if you look at that, did you mention like if you look at that diagram of that second card, it looks suspiciously like four M.2
yeah
ports in there. That. I mean, it's like
running in parallel. Could be multiple SSD controllers. Could be a fancy new controller we haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
Meets the Open Compute Project specifications. They say it's production ready, and we will find out more about that later this year. I'm excited. I'm curious. Yeah. I can't imagine, you know, it's going to be at the Open Compute Project Summit 2016 in San Jose, which is actually going on right now. No pricing is expected anytime in the near future. And if it is, it's not expected to be anything remotely affordable by normal humans.
So. No. Despite our ribbing before the show, this will not be a 10 cents per gigabyte product, unfortunately. I'm just as disappointed as everybody else.
Oh, man. Corsair's got a couple of new power supplies, the SF450 and the SF600 SFX. Are these... they're 80-plus gold certification. Are these expensive PSUs or are these affordable PSUs?
They're fairly affordable. The lower wattage one is going to be... The 450-watt is $89. The 600-watt is $119. That's fairly expensive for the wattage that you're getting, right. But you're paying for the compressed form factor. So these are SFX power supplies. It's Corsair's first SFX power supplies. It was actually a standard that Silverstone created when they were trying to build their own kind of custom form factor machines and small form factor machines where they wanted a smaller depth power supply in there. And so they built the SFX kind of specifications for that. And we have seen a couple of other, I can't remember who they are now, but there's at least one other vendor besides Silverstone that has released an SFX unit. But Corsair now comes into the ring. And interestingly enough, it's probably, it may be because that Bulldog case that I mentioned earlier may actually use SFX. And so they wanted to have one of their own power supplies to sell along with it. So that would make sense as well. But either way, getting more vendors into the ring of selling this particular standard will just help lower prices across the board, give you different options, give you different wattages. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think 600 is the highest wattage we've seen. I think we saw a 700-watt SFX unit recently, but 600 is pretty up there. Like, you could run multi-GPU, you know, maybe not 980 Ti or Fury, but, you know, 980 or 390X multi-GPU as well as, you know, a higher-end Core i7 processor and still get all of that inside as small of a chassis as you physically can fit it in without having the power supply be kind of your limiting factor. Yeah, so I mean, you know, it's good to see them again broach out into something else slightly different. They're fully modular power supplies, which I'm a big fan of, and they should be good to go.
No crazy piles of cables to hide inside the secret panel of your system, which is a big plus.
Yeah, especially considering it's an SFX unit that is going to be into a small form factor chassis, more than likely. You know, being able to disconnect cables you're not going to use and store them away will help make for a cleaner build, definitely.
Cleaner builds are good. March 21st, ladies and gentlemen, Apple is going to have its latest special events. Expected to release a smaller iPhone, a new iPad, and additional Apple Watch bands, possibly the mythical Apple battery watch band. I know many Apple Watch owners are torn between the desire to see an Apple Watch that does more things without the phone versus not wanting to replace their incredibly overpriced timepiece. I'm cranky when I say that. You know, the more time I spend with my Apple Watch, the more time I love Windows, the more I love Windows 10. Feeling cranky about that. It's going to be streamed live on Apple.com. I'm sure there's going to be coverage on Twits. It's funny, to live stream it, you need like a Macworld says you need a Mac with OS X, 10.8.5, and Safari 6.0.5 or later, a PC with Microsoft's Edge browser for Windows 10, or an iPhone, iPad, or iPod Touch running iOS 7 or later, or a second-gen Apple TV or up if you want to watch that live. So basically, iPhone SE, Macworld speculating, and a lot of other places, a 4-inch iPhone, which is
pretty
tempting.
Sure. I thought you could play this back on like the VLC player if you just fed up the RTMP or something, or the HLS link.
I just think it's so 1999 to be listing the browser and platform to watch a streaming video.
Agreed. I can't imagine that there's people out there like, well, I got to watch this Apple Live event. I guess I don't have a MacBook. I need to go buy one immediately so that I can watch it. Yeah.
But that's 10 a.m. Monday, March 21st. 9 to 5 Mac has pictures of the potential new Apple Watch bands that showed up temporarily on a Czech store site. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty amusing. Also amusing to me as a longtime Nest thermometer user who had to turn off all of the fancy I will cool the house down because your family isn't there features, which would turn off with the family in the room with the Nest, which I thought was a bug.
Yeah, same thing happened to me.
Nest's iOS and Android apps will allow it to start monitoring your phone's location. Now, the Internet of Things, in lots of areas, whether you're talking about car devices or home devices, using geofencing sometimes worked well, often doesn't. But I think the new Home/Away Assist is a wonderful addition to the Nest thermostats. And part of what I hope to, this is obviously Google. On the Apple side of things, I hope they come up with some, like an actual standalone HomeKit app. But that's what's... I'm curious. I'm curious to see how well it runs and what is going on with the Internet of Things and it's sucking less.
Agreed.
Quote in the Verge article, Greg Hughes, senior product manager at Nest, says basically by observing the patterns, they're going to figure out when people are actually home, which is good because the thermometer itself doesn't actually often know when people are in the same room. Quote, this is an input that's going to make it more accurate and efficient. Though Nest needs to see your location, the company says it won't track where you go. All information it collects will be encrypted. So it might not track where you go, but I'm curious to see if they bundle that data and offer the services through third-party sales or something like that. So this is not particularly nobody's going, wow, why didn't I think of that? Because lots of other things have done it. But I think I'd like to see expensive devices get made better through obvious solutions. Ooh, I said solution. I never say that word.
But moving on up.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Hey, if you are curious to find out more about what's going on with Ryan Shroud, I suggest you head on over to PCPer.com. And you guys are still running your Patreon campaign. You guys are building bigger, exciting things at PCPer. Is it patreon.com/PCPer
to support PCPer? That is correct. That's the one.
Part of the evolution to the future, the ad-free future of PCPer.
Exactly. It's a longer evolution than initially expected, but it is there.
It is there. You can find me at techthing.com or AVXL, which is the home theater and home entertainment gear and content podcast I do with Robert Heron. You can find that at AVXL.com or search for it on iTunes. That is an actual audio podcast. We're not doing video at all, which is exciting. No video editing. Not yet. Not unless our Patreon gets bigger, and that's AVXL. Patreon.com/AVXL. Man, I got some interesting computer speakers to talk about next week, and I am playing around with an actual built by a real company desktop PC that claims to be ready for VR, and you and I can talk about that after it arrives. That should be highly
interesting. Yeah.
It's not a really tough build. It's just a fairly, you know, healthy check to write if you want somebody else to do it.
Agreed.
I guess depending on how out of control it is when you get in. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to This Week in Computer Hardware. You can find all of our podcasts at twit.com/twitch. Information on how to subscribe and get it in your favorite podcaster. And, of course, you can also tweet at Ryan Shroud or at Patrick Horton on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook if you look hard enough, too. We want to thank each and every one of you for listening. With that, I'm Patrick Horton.
I'm Ryan Shroud.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.